You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 135. All writing is a discipline, but screenwriting is a drill sergeant. Anonymous.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft. It's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie is going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Now, guys, today on the show, we have Catherine Ann Jones, the writer of The Way of Story, The Craft and Soul of Writing. Now, Catherine's been in the business for decades and has written movies for Dolly Parton, has written multiple award-winning plays, multiple books, and much, much more. I wanted to have her on the show to discuss her way of writing and her approach to breaking stories and how you should hopefully connect with that intuition, with that muse that's inside of you, to be conscious while you are writing and how you can tap into that magic. And that's what her whole book is about, is tapping into that magic, that inner source, whatever that might be. And I've talked to many Oscar-winning and award-winning screenwriters who I asked them the question, that I don't know where it is, but I just know that I am a vehicle for this to come through. And hopefully this conversation will help you tap into that for yourselves. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Catherine Ann Jones. I'd like to welcome the show, Catherine Ann Jones. How are you doing, Catherine?
I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I wanted to have you on because you've written many books, but in this conversation, we're going to talk about The Way of Story. And I wanted to hear your perspective on storytelling, especially from your vast knowledge and experience. But before we get started, how did you get started in the business?
The business of writing books, or
the business of the like acting,
show business,
Got it.
Well, like a cat, I've led many lives. Well, like many of us in show business, I started as an actor in New York. Mm-hmm. I acted in 55 plays, Broadway, off Broadway, regional theater. Did some daytime television for a year and a half and a couple of films. And then I just didn't like the new plays, the way women were written. So I decided to write my own plays. And I've had 11 plays produced, many of them have won awards. And that led me to Hollywood. One of the plays was optioned by MGM, and so I came out for that. And at the same time, I won an award, Beverly Hills Theater Guild Award. So they flew me to Hollywood to accept the award and everything. And But you wanted to talk first, not about my film work, but The Way of Storybook, right?
Well, yeah, we just wanted to get the background on you first.
Okay, so I'll do Way of Story then. Well, I taught 8 years at the New School University, taught writing in New York. And then as soon as I came out here, the dean at USC in L.A. asked if I would teach screenwriting. And my first film had come out and got 4 nominations, Best Picture, Best Writing. And I told her I've only written 1 screenplay. She knew my place from New York. This is a very fortuitous thing. Mm-hmm. And the dean said, I want someone teaching graduate screenwriting with a background in playwriting. Now, go figure.
Of course.
No one in Hollywood cares about what you did before you wrote movies, usually. So for 5 years, I taught screenwriting there. And actually, I mentioned the teaching years because for all these years, I taught the craft of writing, just craft, which is essential, of course. But I began to sense that something was missing. It's not just about the left brain, if you're really writing something good. And so I stopped teaching. I moved out of L.A. to Ojai, and I was invited to Esalen Institute, Big Sur. In fact, I'm going there Monday. It'll be my 16th time to teach there. It's a great place. And they welcome people who develop new ideas. And that was perfect for me because I wanted to find another approach to writing any narrative form, not only film, but, you know, books, plays, memoir, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I developed a workshop called The Way of Story, The Craft and Soul of Writing. So the idea is to bring your whole self to the writing table, not just the left brain. But you write from your senses, your gut, and certainly your heart. And that started, and after teaching that for a couple of years, I wrote the book that was published. And schools are using it now in their writing programs, like New York University and so on.
Very cool. Now, you being an actress, starting off as an actress, does that make you a better writer when you write for actors?
Totally. There's Shakespeare and Molière were actors first. Mm-hmm. I just want to remind you guys of that. And there's no better background for dramatic writing than being an actor first. I write very good parts for actors. And I think that helped me get stars to be in my movies and television. So it's a wonderful background. You know, what's always fascinated me is how if we follow our intuition, or as my old friend Joe Campbell said, follow your bliss, you make these sudden turns in life, and they don't make sense outwardly. I had just done starred in a television play that was aired all over America, got good reviews. And that's when I stopped acting. I didn't know why, but something told me this is over. And so for 3 months, I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. And then I wrote my first play. But when I look back, it's almost as if there was some plan there that I didn't know about. Act for so many years and then write plays. Mm-hmm. And then Hollywood invites you. And you write films and television, you know, it wasn't a conscious plan. But I'm always amazed. And it doesn't just apply to creatives. Sometimes people will make changes in their lives and they're not sure why, but they know it's right. Mm-hmm. And then you look back and it all fits together like a jigsaw puzzle.
It's pretty insane how that is with life, because you know, you make a crazy move, which at the moment looks insane, and you're like, people are looking at you like, why would you invest in a company called Apple in 1992? Why would you do that? That seems insane. But then down the line, you did okay.
I know, somehow that's why my second book, Heal Yourself with Writing, is about following that and listening to that intuitive voice. Because I really write intuitively, but when I was asked to teach in New York and later Los Angeles, I had to analyze what my processes were, because I just kind of got into a zone and things happened. And so teaching was another element that made me rethink, and that helped my writing as well as teaching.
So one thing a lot of writers, young writers, start off in is they say that they want to write from complete instinct, from complete, you know, from inside and let it flow. But without craft,
exactly,
it doesn't work. So can you explain the importance
That's why I say my subtitle is The Craft and Soul of Writing. Both are very important. And so the book and the workshop is about integrating the two seamlessly. When you bring those two together, it's powerful. I mean, today we have films, you know, and they sit around in development at the studios. Hey, and then this happens, and then this, and then a car chase and such. And you're just blitzed out when you watch the movie. I am, and you feel nothing other than exhausted, you know, or something. Whereas I've seen a film at a film festival, Bernice Bobs Her Hair, based on a Fitzgerald story. Mm-hmm. And it's about a girl in the 30s who gets her hair cut off. That's the action. And yeah, I was crying. I was just crying at the end of it. So, you know, it's about physical action often interrupts the dramatic action. And to what interests me is what happens between people, mm-hmm. you know, how we do wonderful and terrible things to each other, what makes us do these things. And I guess that's why I don't write action movies.
Right. Like Shrek says, you know, people are like onions and they have layers and layers and layers.
And you get to, you know, take them off, you know.
Exactly. Now, one thing a lot of screenwriters do is when they're choosing the stories to tell, the stories that they're going to write, what advice do you have about how a screenwriter should choose their story? Because so many they chase the market. And if they're chasing the market, they've already lost that battle because the market's already around the corner.
Somewhere else. Exactly. Right. That's a good question. Often people will tell writers, write about what you know. I'm sure we've all heard that. Mm-hmm. I don't entirely agree with that. I mean, it's helpful, of course. But, you know, I taught in the Lucas building at USC. George mm-hmm. Lucas gave the money for it. To my knowledge, George Lucas never traveled in outer space. Not once. And yet he wrote this thing called Star Wars. It did pretty well.
It's okay. It did okay.
So what I tell my students and clients, consultant clients, write about what you feel a passion for. It can be a negative feeling. Like everything David Mamet has written is about corruption of one form or another. Glengarry Glenn Ross, The Verdict, everything he writes is about that. That's what gets his juices going. So find what you care about, because writing's a relationship. And if you're going to move in with a story for, say, 6 months to a year or more, you want to keep the juices going. So you have to care about the theme or the character or the plot. So I'd say write about what you feel passionate about.
And don't chase the market.
Totally not, because as you said, it changes. You know, and with my USC grad students, they were always sort of writing derivative thrillers or something.
Right.
And it just changes, you know, so fast. But if you write about something, I wrote about something I cared about. My first movie was called The Christmas Wife. Well-meaning friends and associates said, you'll never get this produced. There's no sex. There's no violence. Can you imagine being naive enough to pitch a story with no sex and no violence in Hollywood? Hello. It not only got made, I got two top stars, Jason Robards, Julie Harris, top director, David Jones, no relation. And it won four nominations because I really hope that people, HBO produced it. And I really hope that there were audiences that wanted something different, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at success stories throughout Hollywood history, it rarely is the movie that's successful, if it ever is, that is chasing the market. It's generally something that they've been very passionate about. Or I look like a movie like Shawshank Redemption, which was
wonderful film,
which is one of my favorite films of all time. And Frank Darabont was just passionate about this little short story that Stephen King wrote. And hey, let's make this into a movie. There was nothing. And by the way, it wasn't a huge hit, but has aged extremely well.
Wonderful film. Also, Sixth Sense, which was the writer-director's first, it's still his best movie. Yeah. He's tried to chase his own success with the movies that came after. I think his best film is Sixth Sense because he just wrote what he wanted to write, and it wasn't even popular then. Since then, people have tried to write, you know, derivative movies, including himself.
He's been chasing his own dragon for a while. He's always been chasing that success. But it's hard. Like if your first film is The Sixth Sense, it's kind of hard to follow that up.
Well, maybe, but yeah. Our motives for writing count. And if you just write a story, I always know that I may have 5-10 ideas for stories. There's always one story that's like a puppy dog yapping at your heels that will not let you go. That's the one you have to write, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You can write the others later, but something will tell you what to write next.
I was watching a documentary the other day, and they were talking about Michael Crichton, who had this idea about dinosaurs on an island. And he's like, and he put it away, but it just kept hounding him.
Exactly.
And look what, exactly. I mean, Jurassic Park changed movie history after that came out. But
and the first, and the original film is quite good.
Oh my God, yeah. The first one's, it's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece.
The sequels, maybe not, but that first one is.
It's a classic Spielberg.
Now, my second film I had produced came to me in a dream. Sometimes my ideas come at night when I sleep.
Sure.
And this is not also just with me. I'm sure other creatives. I'm sure Van Gogh saw Starry Sky.
James Cameron got Terminator was in a fever-induced dream that he had about this metal skeleton. Right.
Yeah, so I know it's nothing new. But I dreamt one night about an angel, a male angel, actually, who went to heaven and couldn't earn his wings. And they sent him to Earth on a mission. And if he succeeded, he would earn his wings. 10 days, and I wrote the dream down. I always keep a journal next to my bed. And 10 days later, Dolly Parton's people had called my agent, and she had loved The Christmas Wife, the movie I wrote, and she had been looking for a project for 2 years and couldn't find one, and she wondered if I had anything for her. So my agent called, wanted me to come to LA and pitch to her people, and I remembered the dream. Now, the dream was about a male angel. So driving to L.A., I transposed the gender and I pitched about a female angel who happened to be a country western singer.
Obviously.
Talk about custom made. And I pitched it to her people. They said, Dolly must hear that she was in Hollywood. She has a house there. So they took me right over to her house. Now, I don't read about stars' life. I don't read Showbiz magazine, so I don't really know what they like or not. We walked into the garden. There were angel fountains and statues. We walked into her living room, a tapestry of angels. There were angels all over the place, and I thought we're home free.
Yeah.
And she loved the story, and we made it, and we got the highest ratings except for the football game. You can never beat football. I
learned. It's tough to beat the football game,
and
especially
boy, and I tell you, she is one smart woman, Dolly. Mm-hmm. She is not a dumb blonde. You know, she really is a shrewd businesswoman. She's been a megastar for like 50 years.
Almost 60 years.
60, right? You know, not many women actors pull that off. So,
well, I think the shrewd business thing that she did was she kept the publishing rights to "I Will Always Love You," and that alone, I think, built Dollywood.
It's a great song. Yeah, good.
You know, she
good
did very
for her,
well.
Say I.
Yes. Now, when you write, do you start with character or plot?
It varies. I guess as a playwright, I do write character-driven stories. To me, plot is what a character does. It's not separate from the character. But sometimes I'll have a theme. Like with Christmas Wife, I've always been fascinated how, like, on a plane or traveling, you'll meet a stranger and spend just a short time with the stranger, but there'll be this powerful connection. That led me to want to write about that in The Christmas Wife. By the way, it's not a sentimental Christmas movie. We got over 300 rave reviews, and they always made that point, that it was refreshing, and it's not a down movie either, but it's not a typical sentimental ending. But this thing of, we've all experienced it, where you meet someone and you know them, it could be an hour, 2 hours, and yet something has happened between you that changes you.
Yeah.
And that, well, it's Brief Encounters in a way. It's the old English film. Leslie Howe.
Now, do you outline? And if you do, how do you do it?
Well, in The Way of Story, which is a book on how to write, I have a whole chapter on outlines. And then, you know, the different character development, dialogue, and so on. I find I have different processes with different projects. So I don't have one kind of platform I use. But I do, if I start with character, I'll get to know backstory first. I learned that in acting, because, you know, you have page one of the play you're performing. And I learned that my research was to build a backstory for that character. Like years ago, I played Juliet, Romeo and Juliet. And even though she's only 14, I tried to find out who she was before Act One, Page One. And that's very helpful. So your characters appear on stage or on screen, and they've already been living their life. It's not out of nowhere. I don't know if that's clear.
And especially when you're dealing with character. You know, I've heard stories of, you know, directors and writer-directors who write, you know, books almost on their character's backstory that will never see the light of day. But yet, it gives so much depth into the character.
And it's wonderful for the actor, because then on their first day of shooting, they know who they are. They don't have to kind of futz around and, you know, if it's not in the script, they have to bring it to him.
I forgot who it was. It was one of these famous movie star actors who's a fantastic actor, who would like, I think it was the writer who was telling me this, that they requested like an item to put in, like, you know, a box of Tic Tacs or, you know, whatever in his pocket for the entire shoot that no one would ever see, but it's just something his character would carry. Something simple like that adds so much depth.
Well, especially if it's something that meant something to the actor or would to the character.
Right.
Even if it's not talked about. That's right. I studied acting. This dates me, but my first teacher in New York was Lee Strasberg at the Actors Studio.
Not a bad teacher.
So I've used some of the exercises I learned from him for my writing workshops when I teach, like emotional memory, things like sensory recall. And it's very useful because many actors, even who have been writing for years, they don't write, they just follow the exercises. They're all 10 minutes, 5 minute exercises. And what comes out is not, they tell me, it's not something that would come out when they're facing a blank page. So they write from other parts of themselves. And it's, and they think, where did this come from? Wow, I couldn't have written, you know. And it's very exciting as a teacher, and that's why I'm never bored, because everyone has at least one story to tell. And I just love those aha moments when I do. I use visualizations too and things like that, and where something comes through you. Sometimes when you're in the zone, you channel things. I've had that. I wish I could say it happens every time. It doesn't. I've had that happen a few times, and it is so exciting. Shall I give you one example?
Please, please.
My first play was about the final years of Virginia Woolf, the British novelist. And at the time I wrote the play, I had just played her as a character in a play in New York. And I did a lot of research while I was performing her. And then I couldn't let her go after the play closed 3 months later. So I kept reading, and I finally sat down and wrote my first long play. And at the time, her novels were out there, but her letters and her journals were not published. So I had no access. So I had to make up a lot of stuff. You know, what she said, the way she talked. Mm-hmm. About a year after the play came out, several of the things I thought I made up, she actually said.
Really?
Yes. I know, woo-woo, right?
Yeah, so you were channeling her. You were channeling her.
And that happens. It happened to me this year with the book of short stories I'm writing set in India. I wrote one called Murder in Assam. And I've never been to Assam. I've spent years in India, but not Assam. And I made up this fictional short story. An Indian friend of mine sent the story to a friend of his in Bangalore, who is head of a Silicon Valley kind of thing. And she read it, and she wrote to him, and he sent it to me, that what I wrote actually happened.
Wow.
It's about the young women who pick tea in the tea plantations. And it's about rape and murder and so on. I had no idea. But this has happened a few times to me, because I find for myself, my best writing is when I disappear and just something comes through.
And yeah, I've spoken to a lot of creative people about that. Like, where does it come from? And I'm going to say everybody I've ever asked that question to, they always respect that there's like, I don't know what it is. I know I didn't create it personally. I know I was just a vessel that it kind of came through. And when you're writing sometimes, specifically when you're writing, it just flows. And when you're writing in the flow, you're just like, I don't know. Like, sometimes I'll write something and I'll read it. I'm like, who wrote that?
Yeah.
I've written a couple books and I've written, and I go back and I'll start reading just out of, you know, I'll just open up a book that I've wrote and I'll just grab a chapter. I'll just start reading it for fun. I'm like, who the hell wrote this? This is fantastic.
Exactly. Well, that's in the zone. I can't tell you how many times I've heard my students in my classes say that, and I just love it. So that's what I try and, you know, trick them into going in the zone through these little exercises. They're in the book and in the classes, but no, I love teaching. I guess my passions are writing and teaching, but I love both.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Those are two of my passions as well. I mean, what I do here is teaching. I teach throughout, you know, I've become an educator. I've become a teacher as well as an artist, as well as a writer and a thousand other hyphenates that I have. But I found such a passion about giving back to people and sharing people and sharing with people. And that's why I love having conversations with guests like yourself, that I can delve into different aspects. And, you know, I'll ask questions that I just want to listen to, but then it gets listened to by thousands and thousands of people around the world. And it's great. And it really, you know, when you hear some of the work that you've done has affected someone else's life in a positive way, I keep saying to people, it's addictive. When you start giving back, that becomes an addiction of wanting to help and help.
In my generation, we called it making a difference.
Yes, and we're paying it. Now it's paying it forward or something.
It's a good title for a movie.
There is a movie called Paying It Forward. It's a good movie. Now, you did mention something earlier, and I have to ask because I need to know. You said that you were friends with Mr. Joseph Campbell, who is a legend. Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, everybody listening to this knows The Hero's Journey because of Joseph's work. Can you talk a little bit about how you met and how that relationship was and what it was like?
Well, to me, life is story. So everything's a story.
Sure.
I went at that time, I would go to India as my spiritual home. Spent a lot of time there. I had just come back from India the night before, and I was invited to Gerald Sykes and Buffy Johnson, husband and wife. He's a writer. Buffy's a great painter. Her work's in the Metropolitan Art Museum. So I went to the party, and when I walked in, Gerald said, "There's someone you must meet. He also loves India." So they introduced me to Joseph Campbell. I knew nothing about him. I hadn't read any of his books. And we talked, and while we were talking, he said, "You know, India changed my life. I met a great sage in South India and attended his talks, and he changed my life." And I said, "Who was he?" And he said, "Oh, you wouldn't know him because he's not a public figure. He's the real thing, but not, you know." And I said, "Well, I'd be interested to know its name." So he told me the name, and I got very quiet, and I said, "I have just come from his son."
His son was teaching.
His son was also a spiritual teacher. Well, because the father had died in 1959. Mm-hmm. So, and this was in the 70s or something. Wow. And neither one of us spoke for a while. The whole atmosphere changed. And Joe took me by the hand and took me to a corner, and we sat for an hour talking. And that's when our friendship started. And I got to know his wife, who's also a remarkable choreographer, dancer. Mm-hmm. And anyway, you know what Joe Campbell had? I've only seen it twice, and I wish I had it, but I'm in awe when I see it. What Joseph Campbell had is a boyish enthusiasm and passion for mythology that he had when he was 12, and through his whole life, it never lessened. Mm-hmm. You can tell if you watch the Bill Moyers' Power of Myth. He's so excited by what he talks about, and that's genuine. We used to go to plays together, and we saw a rather poor play off-Broadway, and I think it was about Vietnam or something. Anyway, we went out afterwards to have a bite, and Joe just started talking like he does, and I'm sure that's how he was when he did classes. And he was comparing the play with Vietnam and 5th century Greece. And and I turned to him and I said, Joe, this conversation's 10 times more interesting than that play.
Exactly.
But that was who he was. And it's totally genuine. The only other time I saw that, Harold Clurman, the theater director, directed my first long play, the one about Virginia Woolf on the Edge. And he had that quality. And this was at the end of his life. I think he died a year later. He was in his 70s, 80s or something. But he had that. He made you think that your play was the most important thing in the world. And this was, he had that passion. And that's contagious, you know, when you're around it.
And did you meet Joe before Star Wars or after Star Wars?
Before.
And so you were there when Star Wars hit, and then everybody, because I mean, when Star Wars hit, I mean, it brought
was very influenced by.
Well, heavily, but I think that brought a lot of attention to Joseph Campbell's work and everything.
Well, he taught for years at Sarah Lawrence College in New York, but he never got that big attention really until Star Wars.
Yeah, and then it just, and now to this day.
And Power of Myth was made a short time before he passed away.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful they got that on tape, you know. Oh,
yeah, on Skywalker
wonderful
Ranch.
Series.
At Skywalker Ranch they shot that.
Actually, I write about Joe Campbell in a book that was just published this year, my memoir. I finally, thanks to the pandemic, oddly enough, I couldn't travel all over the world and teach like I usually do. So I sat here in Ojai and I've written 3 books. 2 of them are memoirs, and in the Buddha and the Dancing Girl, A Creative Life, I write about Joseph Campbell.
That's awesome. I've seen all of Mythos and all of the amazing programs and stuff that he put out. But I just had to ask you because I've never met anyone who actually knew Joe. So it was a pleasure.
No, he was an original, no question.
No question about
it. It all started when he was taken when he was 12 to the Museum of Natural History in New York. Yeah. And he got interested in the Native American mythology. So it started young. Sometimes when one's very young, you see the direction you're going.
And you got to find what you're here to do. And he definitely found his bliss.
Found him. Yeah.
Sometimes it hits you right on the head.
Yeah.
Now, one of the diseases that writers have is writing stereotypes into characters. And it's just something that needs to stop, like cliche and stereotypes. What advice do you have for writers to avoid it?
Why does Hollywood keep producing those kinds?
If it keeps making money, they'll keep doing something until it stops making money.
There you go. I'm sorry, what was your question?
So how do you avoid writing stereotypes or cliched characters?
Well, I use prototypes myself, like a play of mine that won the most awards is the Inevitable Dysfunctional Family play. I always tell my students, if you want to be good writers and you don't come from a dysfunctional background, I'm sorry for you.
It's very true.
There is no greater father for any artist. But anyway, I was invited to Yaddo. It's an art colony in Upper State New York, to write. And I had been thinking about this play for a year, bits of dialogue. You said, what do I start with? This play started with, I would get these full sentences, lines of dialogue. I'd write them on little scraps of paper, and I would just put them in a bag in my closet on the floor. And after a year, I had all this dialogue, and it was based on my family. My prototypes are my mother, her two sisters, my grandmother, myself as when I was young, and a black maid who had been with the family for 40 years. And it's an all-female play, by the way. As an actor, when you audition for a play, there's usually one or two women's roles and 10 male mm-hmm. roles. So mm-hmm. this was my giving it back, you know. So it was hard to write. I'd end up sobbing. I'd get out, ride a bicycle for an hour, come back. But, it started with real prototypes. And then I fictionalized it. I pushed it over the edge, so to speak. And I was convinced that no one would want to produce this play because it was so me. It was so growing up in Texas, where you are now. Yeah. And that, but I knew I had to write it. It was like an exorcism. I had to get mm-hmm. it out of my system. And then I figured I'd put it in a drawer and then I'd be free to go write something else. I couldn't have been more surprised. That play won more awards than all the other 11 plays. People would come up to me after a production and say, that's my mother. How could you know? I live in Nebraska. I've never been to Nebraska. That's my sister. You've got her down to a T. How could you do that? And I learned a very important lesson as a writer. In the specific lies the universal, not the other way around. No one knew this better than Anton Chekhov, the Russian playwright. He wrote about people he knew. He started with characters he actually knew. And they're as universal today as when he wrote them.
Yeah.
So that's a good lesson. That's why I encourage those I'm teaching or consulting with, dare to be personal. Dare to be personal. It doesn't mean you have to literally write everything that actually happened, but it's what I call be emotionally autobiographical.
There's a DNA. There's a DNA when you're writing. If you're writing based on a real person, even if there's a starting point or a basis in it, there's a DNA there that's authentic. Regardless if, you threw that, your dad into Indiana Jones, your dad wasn't an archaeologist, but maybe his failings, maybe his fear of snakes, maybe all these other things kind of got tossed in there. There's that. That's very powerful. That's a very powerful tool.
Well, what I learned writing in Hollywood, the script has to reach the audience and reader emotionally. And so you can't create the emotions in a reader or an audience unless you feel it first. That's why I use prompt, some of which Lee Strasberg gave me or other places, to get people to actually feel what they're writing. I'll give you one quick example. A woman in my class had written, I think it was a character monologue, an emotional monologue, what I call it. And it wasn't very good. It was kind of dry. So I ask her to get up. I choose someone else from the class, and I do an exercise where they just push their hands as hard as they can and try and throw each other off balance. And then I say, just start improvising the lines, not necessarily what you wrote, but just think of what you want to say to your husband or mother, whatever the character is. And the class is amazed and they applaud because when she was feeling, her adrenaline was going from the pushing, you understand, mm-hmm. and she would start yelling and that and crying. And it was 10 times better than what she had written. Because her whole body and feeling right. and memories came up, you see.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, so that's what. No, we touched something. We touched a few times in this conversation about the inner voice, the zone, the finding the muse, all of these kind of things. Do you have any advice or tips on how to tap into that? Because that's the gold. That's the, I always tell people, that's your secret sauce that nobody else has.
That's the point. Nobody else has it. It's unique to you. And right. that's what you need to go from. Well, even people, I don't know, I don't want to sound like this is the only way, but I hear from a lot of people that have read Way of Story or Heal Yourself with Writing. They both have all these prompts, these short 5-10 minute exercises, and that can throw you there. I also have 6 online courses that if they go to wayofstory.com. Mm,
true.
They can zone in. Daily Om is who produces them. And they take those. So I get feedback from that. But otherwise, there's so many ways. It's all about being totally authentic. If you're really in the zone with your intuitive self, you have to be real. You can't try and be. You know, Hollywood's a place where a lot of people are trying to be something they're not. You know, they think that's the way they'll succeed. And then, but who succeeds? A sissy Spacek from Texas comes around, who's this ex-cheerleader, Texas girl, didn't even bother to lose her Texas accent. Mm-hmm. And she's wonderful.
She is.
You know, when you see her. Her performances. So I think authenticity is really the way to succeed. And even if you don't succeed in the world, you've succeeded in your soul's journey. So, mm-hmm. But there are many ways, meditation, journaling, I don't know, people, if it's in you to walk down that path, you will, and you'll find what's right for you, and it may be something completely different.
Yeah, for me, I meditation is such a powerful thing, and it opens up so many creative windows and doors and avenues that I'd never had prior to doing heavy meditation of an hour or 2 hours of a daily meditation that I sometimes go in with a question, and I come out with the answer.
Exactly. It's good for your health too.
I just found that out. I got my blood work done. And they're like, oh, this is down. Do you meditate? I go, yeah, that's part of what it is. I was like, wow, that's interesting. So yeah, it's extremely healthy for you as well. Now, what advice do you have for the dreaded rewrite?
I have a whole chapter on that in Way of Story.
Yeah.
I say writing is rewriting. Sometimes you may not know your theme. Every good story will have a theme. Mm-hmm. And I always ask my students to tell me what the story is in 2 sentences. It's the shortest prompt, but in some ways it's the most challenging. Sometimes you have to write a first draft before you really nail it, before you know that theme. So after you know what your story is, it's a good tracking thing. You start reading your first draft, and if it suddenly if you're trying to get to LA to New York and you suddenly are in Mexico, you know you've gone off the track somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a flag. This could be cut. Because even if your main character's not on camera or on stage, the supporting characters are there to reveal those main characters or push the plot forward. And if they're not doing those 2 things, that can be cut. So there are other tips in the chapter, but those are
2 good ones. I'll
give you an anecdote.
Sure.
When I was still acting, I was in a Broadway revival of Death of a Salesman. Mm-hmm. George C. Scott was directing us, and he's very talented, but crazy, man. and he was making everyone's life miserable. We were in Philadelphia for the, you know, often shows go out of town before they come to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And anyway, to make it shorter, Marty Balsam was our Willie Loman, lovely man. And George was very anti-Semitic, and he was really making Marty's life a walking hell. And Martin Balsam was already a star.
Sure. You know?
And I was in the hotel lobby walking by, and I saw Marty in the bar. He was like this. He was just. So I went over and sat next to him, and I said, "What's up, Marty?" And he said, "Catherine, I can't stand it anymore. I'm quitting." And I said, "You're the star of the show. You can't quit." And he said, "I just can't take it anymore." And I said, "You tell the producer it's either George or you." And he did that, and George was fired. And guess who they flew in to take over the last 10 days of rehearsal?
Who?
The author. Arthur Miller comes
in. Oh, my God.
And where George is all fire and, you know, vehement.
Yeah.
It was like bringing in Abraham Lincoln. You know, he was calming. He was gentle. It was amazing, you know. So and now, why did I bring that up?
In the rewrite process, but it's a fantastic story. Yeah. So you actually were directed by Arthur Miller.
Yeah, for 10 days. Oh, here's why I brought it up. It is about rewriting, long way round. Mm-hmm. I had lunch with Arthur Miller, just the two of us, and I was just starting to want to write the Virginia Woolf play. You know, I wanted to write. And I didn't tell him that, but I said, "Death of a Salesman's considered a classic now. It's, many think it's your best play. How many times did you rewrite the play?" He thought for a moment. He said 40. No, I'm sorry. He said 36 times.
36 times.
He rewrote Death of a Salesman 36 times. Wow. You see, when we read a great poem or book or play, I remember in college, you have the feeling that it came out from the artist, like from Zeus's head.
Oh, of course. One draft, you're done. Yeah. It's over in a few hours.
36 rewrites. So it's not just the talent, it's that perseverance, you know.
And there's that legendary story of Sylvester Stallone writing Rocky in 2 days. And he's like, "I did write the first draft in 2 days. And then I rewrote it for the next like 3 months, 8 months or something like that."
There you go. Well, that's how it is.
Now, one thing that I think every screenwriter has to deal with, and I think every artist in one way, shape or form, especially in mass market arts like visual arts or filmmaking or things like that. How can you serve your creative soul, your writer soul, and the marketplace at the same time?
You know, boy. If you find out, let me know. You know. Why do you think I'm in Ojai and left Hollywood? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you one example. I always think in examples because I guess I'm a teacher. My first movie, The Christmas Wife, I had an offer first before HBO, a network, asked me that they wanted to produce it. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no sex or violence, and I mentioned in the script. And they said, "We love your script. We love it. We want to do it. But what if instead of the main character who's 65, instead of renting a woman who's his own age for Christmas holidays, what if she's 28? Mm-hmm. And I laughed. I was a New Yorker. I hadn't lived in L.A., so I laughed. I thought they were kidding, and no one laughed. So I realized they were serious. Then they said, "What if, when they're in the cabin for 3 days, just the two of them, what if a rough gang breaks in and terrorizes them?" And then I said, "Well, then it would be like every television movie we've seen." Nobody smiled. So I said, no, I walked away, and HBO produced it as I wrote it.
Look at that.
And it won 4 Emmy nominations.
And there you go.
You have to hold firm sometimes, you know, you just have to hold firm.
Now, I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask all my guests. What are 3 screenplays or plays that you think every screenwriter should read?
Well, when I was teaching at USC Film School, I had my graduate students read 2 screenplays. Chinatown by Robert Towne.
Always, yeah.
That is such a great movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so tight. There's not one mistake in the structure of that story. So Chinatown by Robert Towne and Blade Runner. Mm. Mainly I did that because they were all in their mid-20s, my students. So I figured they'd read that. Another good film, you know, for those that like that genre. God, there are just so many. I read a lot, and I reread, and I re-watch movies a lot, which surprises, even though I'm not voting for the Oscars and Emmys anymore, I stopped paying my dues. Only now I can watch what I want to watch.
As opposed to, like, I got to watch all this so I can vote it, yeah.
I don't know. You know, read good writing. I've read Flaubert's Madame Bovary 3 times just for the style.
Yeah.
I teach memoir too, and I'm listening on 10 CDs, St. Augustine's Confessions, written in the 4th century. He wrote the first memoir, first autobiography in Western history. Wow. And it's wonderful. So, you know, you need to think outside the box. You never know what's going to be useful when you're writing here.
Now, what advice would you give a screenwriter trying to break into the business today?
I've actually had people approach me. It's a friend's nephew or brother. You know, we get those calls.
Yeah.
And they said, can I meet an agent? I've got an idea for a film. I said, well, that's fine, but do you have a good sample script? See, Christmas Wife was my first screenplay. It was, I thought, my sample script. But within 2 weeks, 3 people wanted to produce it. You have to write and rewrite that sucker till it really is there. Hire, if not me, some other consultant who's good. Don't just have your wife or husband or best friend read it and tell you how wonderful it is. Really get an objective eye there to tell you what works and what doesn't. And once you have that, then you ask for connections. And you do need connections in Hollywood. I had none when I came out, but
relationships.
I had my script.
Relationships, it's all built on relationships, yeah. No question.
Well, it's not all built. It's all built on good work.
But without
relationships help bring it to life, yeah.
I guess the relationship is the oil and the engine that pushes the good cargo down the line, if you will.
I'll accept that metaphor.
Now, what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film industry or in life?
Wow. You don't mess around. patience.
Yeah, that's mine. That's mine.
I'm not very patient, which sometimes works for you, you know. I'm an astrologer on the side and a psychic reader, so I really get into astrology. I have 9 planets in fire. It's not exactly a balanced chart. It's great for inspiration and working quickly and teaching and all that. For personal life?
Not so much.
So I think patience. And because of meditating for the last 40-odd years more, I'm more patient, but still a long way to go. I'd say patience has been my toughest lesson.
And where can people find out more about you, your courses, your books, and how to get a hold of you?
Well, I mentioned this Monday I'm going back to Esalen, but the class is full. But there's 20 on the waiting list, so Esalen asked if I'd come back in November. So I'm going to be teaching at Esalen and Big Sur in November, too. Wayofstory.com, wayofstory.com. My books are there, my consultant service. I also do psychic readings, mm-hmm. other things. I've done that for 35 years. So Way of Stories are good, and you can email me through that, too, and connect. But more than anything, I would say be true to yourself. Write the story you want to tell. Don't think about the marketplace. Create a marketplace.
Best advice I've heard today. Thank you so much, Catherine, for being on the show.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it, Alex. Thanks.
I want to thank Catherine so much for coming on the show and dropping her knowledge bombs on the tribe today. Thank you so much, Catherine. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to get her book, The Way of Story, The Craft and Soul of Writing, head over to the show notes at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/135. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and leave a good review for this show wherever you are listening to this episode. Thank you again for listening, guys. As always, keep on writing no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.